You're tuned in to listen to...
He's got through! 35-30!
Well, hit the punch! Rosen intercepted!
Touchdown, Giants!
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is John Schmelk, joined by Paulie Dotz, Paul Dottino himself, for the next 1 hour to talk some Giants football, NFL football. OTAs are underway. The Giants are actually on the practice field right now. I had to hogtie Paul and drag him away, so I'm not out there watching. But it was not open to the media today, so Paul wasn't out there.
No, right. Coach won't miss me, John.
No, he will not. Quite pleased you're in here, actually. So, very quickly, Paul, some news from yesterday we should touch on before we get to your calls at 201-939-4513. And I'm sure the one that Giant fans are most concerned about is the fact that Odell Beckham Jr. not on the practice field, dealing with a little bit of a hamstring issue. The Giants termed it as a precautionary measure. Odell Beckham spoke to Michael Eisen, was in the story that we put up on Giants.com yesterday.
Yep.
He said it feels nothing like it did last year. It's not nearly as serious as that. This is something they're just watching. And by the way, it's not the same hamstring as last year. It's the other leg that's bothering him, number two. So just something to keep an eye on. But this is something they're trying to nip in the bud early so it doesn't come up and crop up again when training camp is here in August.
Hey, whatever they've got to do to make sure that he's ready to go is fine with me, especially since it's only May, John.
I mean,
you're not beating the Cowboys this week.
Well, it is June.
Okay, you're right. He mentioned that to me yesterday, June 1st, and I'm already...
I need you to move forward. I realize it's only like 55 degrees outside, but it is, in fact, June.
Yeah, I haven't flipped my calendar at home yet.
I have to buy you a calendar.
I have one. I just haven't flipped it. That's what happens when it's 60 degrees and it's raining outside and cloudy and miserable like it is these last couple of days. But the point is well taken. You're not going to beat anybody on Sunday, and so... do whatever you have to do to just make sure the guy's comfortable and feels good. However, I will just add one caveat to this, John. We did hear that during his days in college at LSU, there were chronic hamstring issues. Not necessarily anything that would keep him out of games.
Which he didn't miss any games in college.
Right. But they were issues. So, you know, he's still a young guy. But there does seem to be a bit of a characteristic here with his legs.
Well, the good thing about it is last year, even with, you know, quote-unquote, not 100%
hamstrings,
he still played great.
He was great.
So I don't think there's anything to worry about, folks. He said if he had to play, he would be able to play. So those are the important things you have to note when you worry about Beckham and his hamstring. Number two, Larry Donnell sitting out with a tendonitis in his Achilles tendon.
Yeah.
He talked to us during media availabilities. He had partially tore his Achilles tendon in college, played through it. It had healed. It was okay. And a few weeks ago, it kind of cropped up again, and he had a little soreness. He tried to practice through it. Now, much like Beckham, they're shutting him down a little bit, just putting him in the boot, making sure that gets healthy. So, again, once we get to minicamp in a couple weeks, hopefully, or worst comes to worst, training camp at the end of July, beginning of August, he's also going to be 100%.
The two things that I thought were most important when I talked to him, John, I got to him a little bit after you did. I said if there was a game Sunday and we were in the middle of October, would you play? He said yes.
Yes.
That was first. Second thing I thought that was important, he said, I didn't warm up properly today when I went out there. And that's, you know, usually I warm up properly and I get my stuff done and I go out there and it's fine. He said, I didn't warm up properly and I know that's what happened. So he's well aware of what it is that he's got to do to prevent it.
Absolutely right. Good news, Devon Kennard was back on the practice field yesterday, coming back. What was he, an ankle?
Yeah.
So he's back on the field. Nat Burhe, not back practicing quite yet, but I love the fact that I was watching Burhe at practice yesterday, nursing that calf injury. Did you notice he had the practice schedule with all the plays in his hand as the practice? No, but I think that's important. It shows that he's still engaged in the practice. He's paying attention. He's getting his mental reps. Even though he's not out there, he was very much engaged in what was going on out there.
And he better be, because there are snaps to be won, and this is his huge opportunity to make a big impact on this team. So, yeah, and, you know, the other thing about him, John, I have to say, sometimes, and you've seen this too, young players get hurt, young players get sidetracked, and they tend to lose some of their spark.
Yeah.
They tend to get down. You know, oh, you know, woe is me. I'm hurt. They self-pity. I don't sense that with Nat. Nat's walking around here, head held high, a lot of spunk, a lot of energy. He's not feeling sorry for himself at all. And I think that's a really good sign for him.
No, I agree 100%. And again, I don't think that's a really serious injury either.
Right.
I would not expect that to have any long-term consequences. DeMontre Morgan slowly working his way back, not really doing much contact stuff with that shoulder, trying to get back from that.
Coach was happy with him, though.
Coach was happy with him, and Coach also had some praise for Cooper Taylor.
Yes.
Said he liked a couple of the things that he showed out there on the practice field as well.
Yeah, the only other guy, I think, the two guys we didn't mention yet, Ayers, still with the sprained ankle.
Yes,
wasn't
he's not out there. Correct.
Coach said it was still swollen from a week or so ago, but again, that does not seem to be anything long-term. And then Beeson missed his flight because, let's face it, the weather was just miserable, and he was unable to get in to Jersey. And so it's basically the checklist of guys.
Yep, that's pretty much everybody. In terms of OTAs themselves, the team is continuing to advance what they're doing. We're seeing some more blitz pressure packages, pickups and things like that. We're seeing some different drills on the defensive side of the ball with Steve Spagnuolo being back that maybe we haven't seen much in years past.
Right.
And I was interested to listen to Dominic Rogers-Cromartie yesterday. I think you were at the locker room when he was talking.
I was in there. I didn't listen to him, though.
All right. Well, he talked a little bit about how he feels like and I was surprised to hear this because I felt like Perryfield did do a lot of this, that he feels like the stuff they're doing now will give cornerbacks more of an opportunity to disguise what they're doing, make plays on the ball, use their eyes and instincts to try to get some interceptions. And I was surprised to hear that because I thought Perryfield tried to do that a lot, and that's why he played some of those zone coverages that people a lot of times complained about, is that he wanted to give players the ability to make plays on the ball, watch the quarterback, disguise things. Didn't you always get that feeling that that was a lot of the stuff that Perryfield did?
Perry was big on having his guys watch the quarterback's eyes. He was very big on that.
Yeah, no question. That's how you force turnovers.
But I will say this. One thing that Perry didn't do a lot of, at least to my eyesight, didn't do a lot of changing up stuff at the line. In other words, showing a particular defense at the line of scrimmage.
Not a ton of disguise.
Dropping up into different deals.
You would line up where you lined up. Then maybe the second do something different. But you're right. There weren't a lot of moving pieces.
You pretty much did what you showed.
That's true.
And so maybe that's what DRC's talking about. I'm anxious to see when I actually get to real practices in training camp to see more of what he's talking about so we can identify it a little bit better. I do think that one other thing that came to my eye or to my ears yesterday wasn't even so much about Spags and the D, Tom talking about the offense.
Yeah.
Because he was asked, I think it was, I don't know if it was Judy from the Times or from NFL Network or who it was.
Jenny Ventress, maybe?
Might have been Jenny.
Yeah,
asked about the offense and said, how about Eli compared to this time last year and the offense? And Tom was very effusive in his praise as to how well the guys have adapted. They got it. It's instinctive. And they are miles ahead of where they were this time last year, which is to be expected, but it's good to hear. Especially since there are some new components on this offense.
And by the way, we saw a couple of big plays yesterday made by Jerome Cunningham, who's getting more and more opportunities to make some plays here because Larry Donnell's not going. You have Adrian Robinson and Daniel Fells, obviously, but you need at least three tight ends to run these OTA practices. Matt Lacoste out there as well. So he's getting a lot of chances, and he caught a nice seam pass over the middle in that practice yesterday, outran the safeties and basically split them for a big gain. So I see some of his athleticism starting to come to the forefront a little bit, and I'm going to try to get an interview with him this week and give the fans a little taste for what he's all about.
You've seen more snaps at practice over the course of this offseason than I have,
yeah.
But let me share with you some thought. I just think Eli Manning is throwing the ball this spring as well as I've ever seen him.
Very accurate. I saw him throw this great pocket out pass. It was like a 22 to 25 yard out to Corey Washington, right outside the corner, right in front of the safety. It was it was one of the better passes I've seen Eli throw in games or in practice the other day. It was an absolute rope.
And I can't tell you why that is. A guy at this stage of his career, at 33 years old, is having such a great spring throwing the ball. Because, John, we know this because we see him all the time. Eli doesn't always look great in practice. He doesn't look great in the offseason all the time. He looks better in games than he usually does during these sessions, usually, right? I mean,
I agree with
you
that.
With me on that?
That's fair, sure.
But yet, right now, he looks as sharp as a tack.
Yeah, you know, I think part of it, too, is that his timing on these short passes is a lot better. So everything looks sharp and looks crisp. They're not asking him to throw as many balls down the field, I think. So there's so many more completions. Everything, the timing is good. Everything is just in sync. You've been in the offense for two straight years.
Let's see what happens during the season.
All right, how about we get to the calls? 201-939-4513, and then we'll get to your questions and comments on Twitter as well. Let's start with Bob in Brick, New Jersey. Bob, you're up first.
Hey, hello, guys. How you doing?
How you doing, Bob?
Hi.
Good. Listen, I guess my call's going to be pretty good with the way you guys opened the show today, because I wanted to talk about injuries and injury treatment. Since we've led the league in injuries the last 2 years or so, you know, a lot of times on the Internet you hear a lot of complaints and questioning about the way the Giants handle injuries and general overall conditioning for the football players. A lot of times what's brought up is the Stanford and Oregon University training programs and their concepts on how to treat injuries for football players. So I was just thinking maybe it would be interesting at some point to bring someone in or interview someone from the Giants training staff to talk about how injury treatments are done and how general training concepts are done by the Giants. And it's whether or not they're openly aware of what's going on with the Stanford and Oregon programs.
Well,
maybe,
you know, Bob, the one
giving a call to one of the guys from the Stanford and Oregon programs would be enlightening to the Giants fans.
Yeah, Bob, the one thing I can tell you, I know there's a perception out there that since the Giants are a quote-unquote old-school organization, that they're living in the Stone Age in terms of a lot of the stuff and strength and conditioning and treatment and all that stuff. But it really could not be further from the truth. They do studies, analytical stuff, every offseason trying to improve their strength and conditioning and their medical stuff. Ronnie Barnes and his crew work with the NFL. They go to all these meetings, all these conferences to learn about the newest technologies and the newest methods for training, keeping guys healthy in treatment. They introduced the GPS system a couple years ago to track player movement, to cut down on soft tissue injuries, and that did, in fact, work last year. They have people coming here doing yoga with the players during the week to keep them flexible. So they really do use a lot of the newer stuff that people are using around the country. They're very abreast of it. They do a lot of work on it, and honestly, I know people don't like the answer because you always want to have a good answer. I just think they've had a lot of crummy luck the last 2 years. I realize it's not what people want to hear, but Will Beattie's doing a simple bench press, and he tears a pec. What are you going to do?
I can't explain that.
What are you going to do?
I would only add this to what John just said. Remember, we're in New York, and everything comes through the finest medical facilities in the country,
hospital
if not the world.
Hospital of Special Surgery is one of the top orthopedic hospitals on the planet.
I mean, trust me, the Giants are aware of every program that's out there. I mean, whatever it is that they decide to use or whatever recommendations they follow, that's up to their medical staff, and they got a great history over the years of taking care of their players as best as possible. So I would only say this. I appreciate your thoughts. But trust me, if there's some kind of medical plan or program or system that somebody's using somewhere around the league, chances are at some point it's passed through New York at the Hospital for Special Surgery, and the Giants have at least had a chance to look at it. I don't think there's anything out there that they don't know about. Dr. Warren is one of the most respected physicians in this league. Okay.
I think
he's gone. And by the way, it's no coincidence, John, and I know you're aware of this. Over the last many years, and I've been around a long time, so I'm telling you, this is a fact, a lot of players and a lot of teams will send their guys to Dr. Warren for second opinions.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll send them to Dr. Warren sometimes to do the surgery.
Oh, yeah, Dr. Warren is almost like James Andrews level orthopedist.
I mean,
absolutely.
He is way up on that totem pole.
Oh, yeah, no question.
So, you know, I'm not going to question him.
201-939-4513. Stick on the phones. Andrew in Stanhope, New Jersey is next. Andrew, what's up?
You're right. In this area, in the best hospitals, the Hackensack one, and also in Bergen County, there's other awesome hospitals. So they're definitely on the forefront.
New York Presbyterian as well is another one that's very, very good.
Yeah.
The Hackensack Hospital, where Dr. Warren is, they
sure
do a lot of charity work with the Giants.
They
collaborate. And speaking, because I've cover some of the charities. So it was a pleasure to meet John at the J Fund the other day. And like I told Paul, you guys are bigger in person. I guess like when Roman Open is in the little booth with you guys, you look smaller. But
you know what? You know, Andrew, you laugh. That's why I try to stand next to Lance Medal as much as possible. It makes me look like a freaking giant.
Oh, my goodness.
He's the one guy that doesn't look bigger in person.
That is true.
Yeah, Coach Coughlin was awesome. His speech in the beginning to the kids and the families, how they have to fight. You know, he used his football skills as a coach, you know, motivational skills. And then he put up an example on the screen of a girl who had cancer, who's now fully in remission, graduated county college, now Florida. Now she's enrolled in Florida State. So it was real emotional, and it was an awesome day. And my station gave me football questions to ask, but I thought I didn't ask Coach Coughlin because I thought it was inappropriate to talk about football on that day. But what they wanted me to ask was about the quarterbacks, about Prince and Cromartie, the health of the two cornerbacks, and who do you think the slot cornerback will be. So that's my question for the day about the corners. And I also, real quick, Eli, I think if the pieces around him are healthy, he's just going to light it up. It'll be one of his best years, like 2008, one of his top 2 or 3 years of his illustrious career.
Well, with the weapons
Thanks, Andrew. Appreciate it.
The weapons Eli has at his disposal and the way he's throwing the ball now, if the O-line holds up, I could easily see this being one of the best years he's ever had. I still think he's in the prime of his career. I'm one of those who thinks he has another 2 or 3 of those stellar seasons left in his cannon. In terms of the DBs, I'll let John talk about DRC because he saw him yesterday. I will only tell you, Prince seems to be coming along really, really well from the tear that he had, the pec tear. Or the biceps tear?
Biceps tear.
I keep confusing those two because it's in the front of the shoulder. And then McBride, who has the most experience from a couple of years ago.
And he has been in the starting slot spot so far.
To this point.
Yes.
To this point.
Which doesn't mean anything.
Seems like he's got an inch up on the other guys, but that's really all it is because Spags himself says he's going to mix and match, and he's got to find out as much as he can about all the guys around the roster. But I know you said you talked to DRC.
Yeah, we had a chance to talk to DRC. You know, he feels good about it. And it was a funny exchange with him and the reporters. They asked him if, you know, now he with Antre Rolgon, his good buddy, you know, he's the, you know, oldest veteran really in that room. He's been around the longest, not with the team, but in terms of being in the NFL. And they asked him, are you taking on a leadership role? Are you becoming more vocal? Prince said that you're really, you know, letting your voice be heard more. And if you know Dominic Rogers-Cromartie, and this is not meant in a bad way, he's just not a very vocal guy. Like, you talk to him, he's very nice, he's amicable, he's a very friendly guy to talk to. He just doesn't like to talk. He's not comfortable speaking publicly. It's not his thing. So he kind of looks at the reporters and just goes like this. Guys. That's not true at all. That's not me. That's not what I do. And he basically said Prince now is kind of like the vocal captain in that cornerback's room, which, you know, Prince heard from the side and went, oh, no, that means they're going to want to talk to me now. So I think it's interesting the dynamic that's forming. Dominic Rogers-Cromartie is heavier now than he has been in the past. It's not fat, mind you. It's muscle. He's about 10 pounds heavier muscle-wise than he was before. I imagine that'll probably come down a little bit by the time the season comes. You know, you want to build strength in the offseason. Trust me, watching him in practice, he didn't lose any speed.
No.
Dude's still fast. He's breaking on balls. He's playing great. So, guys, you're in great shape with your two starting corners in Prince and Dominic Rogers-Cromartie, and there's going to be plenty of competition after that.
I think the one thing that's interesting about DRC's demeanor to us, John, is that we already know by his own admission he's not afraid to yap a little bit on the field. Remember last year when he was talking about Dez? And you got to get inside Dez Bryant's head because he's going to try to get inside of your head too. And it's clear that he's a different guy in the field of play than he is with the rest of us. Hey, you know what? A lot of leg issues he had to fight through last year. And he did the best that he could and tried to play at a decent level. But I'm sure that he probably feels as though he wants to come back and show everybody what he can do when he's good and healthy and ready to go.
All right, folks, you have a couple open lines at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Let's hit up some Twitter questions. I want to make sure we get to those early and often throughout the show. Big play alert from at Giants on Twitter. Ryan Nassib is Ben Edwards deep for a big gain. So at Big Blue Beckham wants to know, what do you guys have on Ben Edwards? Who is this guy? Is he any good? Paul, your thoughts?
Watched a little bit of him yesterday, early in practice. Didn't stand out necessarily. Just looked like another one of those, you know, off-season guys who comes in and tries to fill out the roster. It wasn't, to me, there was nothing there spectacular that made me drop my jaw or open my eyes and say, wow. He did field some punts.
I was going to say, he is back there fielding punts. Number six he's wearing,
yes,
right?
Yes, he's wearing number six.
So he was back there fielding a lot of punts. It looks like he had pretty good hands catching the ball on those punts.
That is true. Mm-hmm. I saw no difficulties. Here's the best thing I'll say. He didn't stand out, but he also didn't stand out in a negative way. It wasn't
correct.
Like he did anything bad. I didn't see him dropping balls. I didn't see him looking lost. Again, competition. Let's just see as the guys move forward step by step through the offseason process as to what they can show. But I didn't hear Coach talk about him either, so I don't have anything to add on that front either.
All right, at Al G Wiz, is Lacoste looking good against the Giants' safeties, or is it the safeties aren't covering well against the tight ends?
Well, you saw more 7-on-7 than I did.
Yeah, you know what? I think the tight ends at this point have shown pretty good hands. I've seen more from Lacoste, in my opinion, as a receiver than a blocker so far.
Non-contact drills, you're not going to see anything as
right.
a blocker.
But let me put it this way. In terms of his body build and structure and the way he runs his routes and his natural hands, right now I probably, just from what I've seen so far, and again, you're not going to say, well, I'm blocking because there's no contact and OTAs. You're absolutely right about that. I see him as more of a pass catcher type, and again, I'm not saying he's going to be soft and not going to block, but I see him as a guy that seems like a pretty natural pass catcher at this point.
I do like the way he looks the ball in. Look, I've been raving about him for weeks now, so I'm not going to jump on any more of his shoulders because I don't want to put more pressure on him than I already have. But he looks a lot to me, John, like a Jake Ballard type, to be perfectly honest with you. That's what I see with Matt Lacoste.
It's Kevin Boss, too.
Again, you mentioned Boss. I probably see more Ballard, but I could understand.
See, I don't think he's quite as thick as Ballard was. And I know he's not as quite as tall as Kevin was.
You see, Boss had that very large wingspan with the height and the long arms. I don't see that in Lacoste.
No, he doesn't have the height, but I feel like the build of his upper body and like his general thickness
and athletic build
is more similar to Boss than it is to Ballard.
I will give you that. Ballard had a little more broadness to him.
Yeah, absolutely.
But in terms of stature and length, he looks much more like a Ballard.
I think that's fair.
And I'll tell you what, Ballard was a better blocker than Boss.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I'm curious to see if that's what Lacoste can be.
All right, Ben at Big Ben Z. Football is the modern-day gladiator sport. Injuries are unavoidable. Bad luck, too. More reason to expand the rosters. 53-man rosters aren't large enough for modern-day football. At least 58 to 60, in my opinion, make talented teams deeper and safer. I would have no problem with them expanding rosters because I think a lot of times, you know, guys are out 3-4 weeks at a time. You can't put them on IR because you're losing for the season. You have to have roster spots occupied by hurt players. Players Association would love it. You get more guys with jobs. I think that's something that they could certainly look at down the road. It wouldn't shock me if the rosters got a little bit bigger. They already got a little bit bigger when they changed the third quarterback rules. That gave teams a little bit more flexibility.
Yeah.
So I would not be surprised if down the road we do see the rosters get a little bit bigger.
They also added a couple of practice squad players.
That's correct.
Last year, mm-hmm. too. But here's what I'd like to see done, John. I've talked to coaches about this. In fact, I even talked to Jerry Reese about this last year. How about having more flexibility with injured guys and the practice squad? In other words, if a guy winds up, you know, getting knocked out, you know, for a couple of games and you want to activate a practice squad guy, don't make it so hard for the rules, which they are now, where you have to, okay, you got to put this one guy down. Why don't you just say, look, we're going to deactivate this guy. Maybe he's got a concussion. Right. And the NFL protocol says he's not going to play for at least 2 weeks because he can't pass the baseline. Well, now, you can't IR him, right? Because now you're going to lose him for the year. Even if you short-term IR him, you can lose him for half the year. It's a mess. So what are you going to do? So now, basically, you just sit there with a body you can't use for, let's say, it's 2 weeks, John. A lot of concussions are 2 weeks. A lot of them are. Well, what are you supposed to do? Well, now, if you want to bring up a practice squad guy, you got a problem because you don't have room on your 53.
Yep.
So here's what Jerry and I talked about this. How about some type of list where if you've got a guy medically like that, who, hey, he's got concussion, he's not going to play for 2 weeks, put him on the concussion list, so to speak. Okay, baseball has that now, right?
They
or is
do?
Basketball? Which sport has that concussion
baseball
list?
Does.
Baseball.
They have the 7-day head injury.
Right, right. So how about put in one of those so that you are allowed to store a guy over there and say, okay, fine, he goes there, he couldn't pass the NFL protocol, so you're not jimmying around with the rules. If you can't pass the NFL protocol, John, you're not cheating.
Right.
Okay? Let us activate the practice squad guy for the week so we have a healthy body that we can use in the game, and then you know what? We put him back down on the practice squad and get our guy off the concussion list when he passes the test. What's so bad about that?
I agree.
But
and especially in a league where you're trying to take care of head injuries, make sure you can take care of the guys without penalizing the team for it.
Exactly.
I agree.
And we're not – there's no cheating involved in that. The practice squad guy gets activated. He gets the minimum salary prorated one game, or if he's up for 2 games because the concussion guy's out for 2 games, and that money's going to have to go against your salary cap. So we're not looking to cheat anybody with that. We're just looking to get as many healthy players available each Sunday as you can possibly get. Is that? I mean, the logic is too easy, John.
No, I agree, Paul. All right, here's a question from Jazzy J-Dog. How is Landon Collins handling running the back end of the defense? I've been watching him fairly closely over the course of practice the last couple of weeks. He's been more often closer to the line of scrimmage than he's been in deep center field, from what I've been able to
tell.
Do you agree with that?
The limited stuff I've seen, yes. I think part of what he's doing is still feeling his way through it.
Of course.
You know, and so they're throwing a lot at him. From what I've heard, and again, I don't know 100% now. From what I've heard, they're pretty happy with his receptiveness to everything.
Oh, yeah.
But what they're trying to figure out now is how much he's going to retain over the course of time.
And I've seen him do about everything. I've seen him blitz. I've seen him cover tight ends man-on-man. I've seen him play deep. I've seen him play run support. So I've seen they're using him in a lot of different ways, just like they said they would when they drafted him. So that is certainly something to note.
I will say this too, though, John. He doesn't look quite as confident out there right now during these practice sessions as he did when he was playing at Alabama, because he knows he's made a big jump.
Or as confident as when he was in the rookie OTAs. Not the rookie OTAs,
correct.
The rookie minicamp.
Correct.
Where he knew he was with a bunch of guys that, frankly, he's probably more talented than, based on physical skill.
Yes.
You can tell. Humbled isn't the right word, but you can tell he's maybe being slightly more deferential to the veterans around him in these OTA situations.
Agreed.
He's not quite as vocal and yappy back there as he was during
absolutely,
OTAs.
Yes.
And you know what? That's not a bad thing.
No,
not a bad.
No, it's not. He knows his place, and he's going to earn it.
I'll go back to Twitter in just a second, but let's go to Andrew in Pennsylvania. He's up next. Andrew, what's going on?
Hey, guys. How you doing? I missed the beginning part of your show, so if you spoke on this, sorry. But first and foremost, Odell Beckham's hamstring, that was just precautionary, nothing to really be worried about?
Yeah, you know, that's what Coach said yesterday. Again, if you go to Giants.com, he had a pretty long conversation. I'll bring that up right now. We'll read you some of his quotes with Michael Eisen talking about the injury. But, yes, they're terming it precautionary. It's not the hamstring that he hurt last year. It's on the other leg. So that's something to note. And they believe better to, rest it now, get him ready, if not for minicamp, then training camp. They don't consider this to be, excuse me, a tear or anything to the point or a level or close to the level as it was last year.
Okay, that's good. Now, also, continuing on the wide receivers, not just Corey Washington, but we all know about him last year, and it seems that he's showing all these highlights in the OTAs again. But the whole back end of the wide receivers depth chart, I mean, we drafted that kid. We got the kid from Dallas. Preston Parker's still on the team, right? Corey Washington, and then you got the starting three. How do you see this shaking down? Like, who's going to get cut?
The back end of the depth chart is going to be one of the more interesting competitions, I think, of the training camp, John. When we get to August, those preseason games are going to mean a ton, because Tom Coughlin is going to look for two things. He's going to look for consistent production, okay, and he's going to look for special teams. And Corey Washington did not do himself any favors last year by I don't want to use the word slacking, but not being as impressive as he needed to be on special teams. Coach Coughlin made that very clear in his statements toward the end of the season. And so the message is out there. He need, you know, Corey Washington needs to read that, needs to understand it, and needs to react, because it's clear he's got skills to play in the league, but he's going to have to do all the little things that give him the opportunity to get on the field. I'll tell you one thing, Jeremy Davis out of UConn, oh man, he has taken to David Tyree like he's his big brother. He's telling people he wants to be a Pro Bowl special teams player. He is doing and saying all the right things that Tom Coughlin's going to want to see and hear. And, I mean, I just feel very good about Jeremy Davis going after it. I think he's going to give himself a job.
And, Andrew, very quickly, I want to add, these are the quotes from Beckham yesterday talking to Michael Eisen at Giants.com. It's always frustrating when you have to miss what you love doing. Just not practicing today was enough for me, but it's part of the game. The good thing is that it's just precautionary. I don't want to miss anything. I'll just go with the flow. And he also said if the Giants were playing a game this week, Beckham would be playing. He would not be missing the game. So hopefully that should rest your mind a little bit.
Okay. One more thing. I'll take it off the air. But who's this this Harper kid that I'm seeing in the highlights too? Is he a wide receiver or running back?
Harper was a running back that they brought in right after, I believe, rookie minicamp ended. I think a couple days after.
Yeah,
because
I remember seeing
mini
him
camp,
there.
And they brought him in right after that. So, you know, he's a guy that is more of a physical back. You know, they have Vereen and Darker who are quicker, faster guys. He's more of a physical guy in the Andre Williams type of role. So he's a guy that will fill out the end of that roster and provide some valuable depth. Thanks, Andrew. Appreciate the call, bud. 201-939-4513. I want to go back to Twitter here if I can find my page here. Here we go. Paul, this is from at Big Ben underscore Z. How has Double O looked so far during OTAs?
Double O is very quick off the snap, and I like that about him. I also love his attitude and his demeanor. But again, he's a trenches guy, and trenches guys have a hard time showing a lot of things in non-contact drills. You know, what we can see is his athleticism and his quickness, and I don't think anybody would question that.
201-939-4513. We do have a couple open lines if you want to jump on with us right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. We'll put you right up. Let's go to, let's see, Giants Nation at Big Blue Beckham. Since Corey Washington is already making plays, do you think we keep six wide receivers on the roster? And I'll say Corey Washington, if he wants to be in the roster, better play some special teams too.
Six receivers is a lock if Cruz starts on PUP.
If you're counting Cruz in that six.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, if Cruz is okay and he's able to start week one, maybe you keep five. Maybe. I think they're probably going to lean to try to keep in six if they can. The problem that I have, John, is I think they're going to have to keep an extra defensive back, because they're thin back there, especially at safety and in the corner depth chart. We've discussed the defensive line. They got a lot of defensive linemen on this team.
Oh, yeah.
And they're probably going to want to keep an extra defensive lineman. Well, where's that coming from? It's hard. It's really hard. You go, what? You know, we talked about this before. Anita and I talked about it yesterday. Linebackers. How many linebackers do you keep? Can you try to skimp and do it with five, knowing that John Beeson's injury track record is not very good?
Risky.
You know?
And how many offensive linemen do you keep? Do you go eight? Or do you go seven?
No, I think it's going to be eight or nine. I think it'll be eight or nine. I don't think they'll go seven.
There was at one point last year, I think, where they only had seven.
It can happen, but right. I don't think you want to go there.
I agree.
So, see, here's the one thing, folks, and we get into this. In fact, it's been this way for the last couple of years now because of all the injuries that this team seems to go through during the summer. If you're at least clean during the summer and don't have a lot of guys hurt,
right,
you can make those legitimate decisions based on the positions and the talent that you have. But when you start getting guys hurt in the spring and the summer, now it's not guys beating each other up at their own positions. It's guys having to steal from another position because they got to cover for the guy who's hurt.
201-939-4513. Dean's in Connecticut. Dean, what's going on?
What's going on, guys? How you doing?
Doing well, Dean. What's up?
Hey, all this negativity, man. Can I just flip this up and have Giants fans?
Are we negative?
I think he means the callers, not us. But go ahead, Dean.
All right, here's what I'm excited about, okay? We got Spags back, all right? And not only do we have a decent defensive line, but, I mean, with Landon Collins, you could put him in the box. You could blitz Landon Collins. You can blitz Devon Kennard. I mean, we have some athletic pieces behind the front four that I'm extremely excited about. Everyone's worried, oh, BD's down, you know, next man up, and that's how it is in this league. Somebody gets hurt, next man's got to step up and do his job. But I have a funny feeling that we're going to break our old sack record. What was the record that year? Was it 47 sacks we had in the season?
Oh, boy. I think it was 48, but I will double-check it. I have to go take a look at that. But, yeah,
Johnny, I stumped you, Johnny boy. You see that?
Oh, dude, that's a tough individual number to remember. But I will go back right now.
I thought you were the Giants guru there, my friend.
Nah, that's Paulie Dotts. I want you riding Paulie Dotts on this one.
Paulie Dotts got the answer. I know he does.
No, he's looking it up. He's cheating.
I'm looking it up. because
I'm not watching. I'm only on the phone.
That's
so
all right.
I can't see what you're doing.
Because I have, to me, I'm worried about season by season by season. How many sacks do I think the Giants need to do what they need to do to be competitive? I'm not thinking about, well, how many sacks do they have to get to break a record? Obviously,
worried about that in all aspects. The way I probably rephrased it wrong. What I'm thinking is I think we might beat that record, and it's going to come from all different spots all over the field because we have linebackers that can blitz. We have safeties. Burhe was known as a missile. You could send him on a blitz. Kennard, 00, Pierre Paul, if he's
absolutely.
Healthy, you know? I mean, I think we have weapons to break this sack record, you know?
Well, look at it this way. They had 47 last year, and I remember going into the season, Roman Oben and I had broken this down because obviously Roman was an offensive lineman. He's very concerned about things like that. And I said to him, they're going to have approximately 45 sacks to be a respectable defense, to be a defense that gives them a chance to win.
Absolutely, and agreed 100%.
And they wound up with 47, which was a good number for the season. I think the problem was, obviously, they came a little bit more bunched in the second half when the team was already kind of out of it because of the injuries. But
I think our problem last year, honestly, and I think a lot of people agree with me, was that Eli had no time to throw. If you cannot have Eli backpedaling. If we had a decent offensive line last year.
Yeah, but we're talking.
Gave him time.
But we're talking. Yeah, but we're not talking Eli right here. We're just talking about the defensive line and the defense as a whole. You know, if you can average about 3 sacks a game, which if you think about it, you know, 3 times 16 is 48. If you can average about 3 a game, I don't think you can ask much more from a defense reasonably and say, okay, you know, we have to have more than that. If you can ask them for that, I think that's a very reasonable number to be a good D.
I had it right. 48 sacks for the Giants in 2011. I had the number right.
And that was the record.
I think it was. I don't think they've had more than 48. Do you?
You know?
I think that was the most sacks they've ever had as a franchise in a single season since they started recording it.
I tell you what, that's part of the problem, too. The numbers aren't necessarily, you know, all the way accurate. Remember the years of Lawrence and Leonard Marshall and those fellas. The other thing you got to remember, too, is that Jack Gregory had over 20 sacks 1 year back in the early 70s when they weren't recording them officially, and he was a monster pass rusher. Robustelli and Cavage back in the late 50s and early 60s were piling up sacks left and right, and they didn't get credit for them because Elias doesn't recognize them. So
what about Deacon Jones? Deacon Jones was amazing as well.
So I guess maybe that's an accurate number by what we have, but I bet you the Giants have had more than 48 sacks in a season.
And I was talking more about Tom Coughlin era. In the Tom Coughlin era, I believe 48 is the most sacks the Giants have had.
That's probably true.
Anyway. Right, well, I want you to write on the board for me right now, Dean from Connecticut. Giants will surpass 50 sacks this season.
Woo! All right, I need I got to find a piece of scrap paper. Hey, Johnny Mack, you got a pen and a piece of scrap paper for me?
I'm good.
You got it, Paulie?
Yeah, I got you.
There we go. Got to put it on the board. That's fine. I need a
pen and if I'm
too.
Completely off, I won't call for at least a month after the season.
That's all right, Dean. Nah, you know what? I like bold predictions. I'm not going to punish you for it. All right, so let's see. It is June 2nd, 2015. Dean,
50, huh?
In Connecticut.
50.
Giants.
I'm going with 50, the big half a century. I'm going with it.
All right, Dean, I'm going to ask you this. Who is going to lead the team in sacks with how many?
Oof. I'm not going to go with Jason Pierre-Paul.
Okay, gutsy, I like it.
Well, you're making a mistake.
You know, that's really, you're putting me on the spot here. I think they're all going to be collective. Nobody's going to have that much.
Okay, so Dean, how about this? Instead of giving me the name, what it's going to be the number for the amount of sacks that will lead the team individually?
What's the number? I'd say the person with the most amount of sacks is going to be around 11, 11 and a half, I think. I think Kennard's going to get about 7, 8, in my opinion, this year with Spags.
I'm telling you right now.
If
they get 50, JPP's going to have about 17.
I'm with Paul on that. I believe if they're going to get to 50, I think JPP minimum has to get 15 sacks. Minimum. Yeah.
All right, well, maybe DeMontre Moore makes a great step, and you never know, guys. You just never know. Football's different every day.
Would love to see it.
Dean, it's going on the board, my friend.
50 sacks, guys. I'll talk to you later. God
bless.
Thanks,
pal. Appreciate it, man. It's on the board. We're on the board. I need to have, like, a little stack of paper here so I can make sure I add stuff to the board. 201-939-4513. What do you got?
One thing that will help that, John, is if the Giants are playing ahead a lot more than they have been in recent years.
That would help a hell of a lot, wouldn't it?
Okay. And you know, that's certainly been an issue here, too. Anyway.
No question. 201-939-4513. Let's see. I lost my page here on Twitter. How about this? Angel at IMXAngel. Any news on Dwayne Harris? Haven't been talking much about him. Is he still doing mostly special team snaps with just a couple of snaps at wide receiver? I've seen him out there at wide receiver, too.
I've seen him out there.
Sure.
Yeah. And quite honestly, you know, he's one of the guys who, when they brought him in, and we talked about it from the day he signed, John, and then Jerry Reese seconded everything that we said, he's a four-way player for them.
Yeah.
You know, he really is. Punt return, kick return, gunner, and wide receiver. That's why they valued him as a high target in free agency.
You know what I saw yesterday that I thought was very interesting? The first team wide receivers out there yesterday, because there was no Cruz and no Beckham. Reuben Randall was the quote-unquote number one guy. Did you see where he lined up in three wide receiver sets?
I did not.
He was in the slot.
Oh, that must have been after I had to come in here.
Yes, I believe if almost the entire hurry-up portion, Reuben Randall was in the slot. And he actually caught a couple nice slants over the middle using his body to shield the smaller corner across the middle. I thought that's the one thing we haven't seen Reuben Randall do a whole lot his first 3 years. He has not played a lot in the slot. And I saw him there a lot practice yesterday. I know. That's why I thought it was significant.
You know, John, here's the one thing that I want to tell people about Randall, you know, his quiet 900-plus yards last year. And I mean that. It was a quiet number, but he was productive. He needs to show more than just the flashes. But here's the thing. Beckham's going to draw double coverage. Mm-hmm. If Victor Cruz is able to be even 85% of what Victor Cruz is supposed to be, okay? If Larry Donnell, you know, continues to show that he can still be a threat in the passing game, with Vereen coming out of the backfield in passing situations, right. Reuben Randall is going to be singled up in a lot of cases by either a safety or maybe the third or fourth best corner on the field. He's got to do business against that guy.
Yeah.
Whoever that is, he's got to do business.
I have an interesting fact or fiction question that we'll do later on our fiction video that might be somewhat related to that. We'll have to see. Let's go back to our phones. 201-939-4513. Derek's in Atlanta. Derek, step next. What's going on?
Hey, John, Paul.
Hi.
Hey, didn't the Giants have like 55 sacks in the Coughlin era at one time?
Well, you know what? Our man Shakes on Twitter just told me to check out 2007 to see how many they had in 2007.
Talking
to
OC and Michael,
they had 53 in 07. That would be the Coughlin era record. That's correct.
Yeah, I knew it was up there, but it's not uncommon. It's not. I don't think it's that far fetched to have 50 because if you give JPP 13. Let's say DeMontre Moore has his coming out year and gets 12.
12?
Hankins.
Okay.
He had 5.5. I mean, he had a lot of hurries, so it's not on. If he puts on weight and he becomes the player, I don't see why he can't get 12 sacks.
Okay, go
but,
ahead.
So Rowan gets Hankins 7. Okay. We got Ayers with 5. We get Kennard with 5. That's already like 42, 43 sacks right there. So the rest of the team can't get it combined another 8 sacks, 7 sacks.
Hey, look, music to Tom Coughlin's ears.
You know,
I want to go back to just the 86 Giants. They had 59 sacks.
Wow. There you go.
You know, that was the 86 team that won Super Bowl 21. So that's why, you know, I'm not going to get into what's the Giant team record for sacks. Again, there's a lot of numbers before Elias started taking count. But that's the kind of number we're talking about. That, you know, you want to start talking 50-plus sacks, you got to be talking about that defense. Now, think about that defense. George Martin, Carl Banks, Lawrence Taylor, Leonard Marshall. I mean, that was a defense much better than this.
Derek, I want to add this, too, just to note, and then I'll let you go. Since 2007, there have been 12 NFL teams to tally 50 sacks or more. So that's about 8 seasons worth. You're looking at about anywhere between 1 or 2 teams each year at 50 sacks. So if you get 50 sacks, you're either going to lead the league or be second in the league in terms of sacks. So 50 would be a very, very high end number. Now, it's a great number. We don't love that number, but it is a very high bar.
How about we go back to what Roman and I said last year?
I bet you the league leader every year has got over 50 sacks. And
not every year.
How many did the Cardinals have?
Not every year. Last year, only one team had 50 sacks. That was the Bills with 54. In 2013, the league leader in sacks, the Panthers had 60 that year, and 2 other teams had 50. That was an aberration year. If you want to go back to 2012, for example, 2 teams had 52, 1 team had 51. Go back to 2011. Let's see. In 2011, 2 teams had 50 exactly, the Vikings and the Eagles. Now, remember, as we go back further here, teams pass the ball less, so the sack numbers are going to be slightly deflated. For example, in 2010, Derek, not one team tallied 50 sacks.
I think the point that John's trying to make is that you're talking about the elite sack numbers being up in that range.
And also,
it's not reasonable.
And also in 2009, not one NFL team tallied 50 sacks. And in 2008, 2 teams had 50. So basically, bottom line, Derek, if you get to 50, you're either going to lead the league or you're going to be in the top 3.
Right. I mean, and I don't know that anybody can go in and reasonably say, well, we expect to be there. That's a little much to ask.
I'm just curious. Can you look up how many Cardinals had last year?
The Cardinals had last year? Sure. Let me check that for
you. I'm just looking for, like, an ultra-aggressive team because I think we're going to be an ultra-aggressive defense. So I'm just kind of curious on how many sacks they had.
Let's see. In 2014, I remember last year the Giants actually did total 47 sacks. So they did have a good number of sacks.
And that's pretty good for a team.
And a lot of them came at the end of the year. Last year, the Arizona Cardinals, believe it or not, only had 35 sacks last year. There were 24.
Wow. And they blitz all the time.
The Bills led the league with 54. The Ravens and Eagles were tied for second with 49. The Giants came in at 47. Chiefs 46. Jaguars 45. Jets 45. Lions 42. And then the Broncos, Packers, Colts, and Vikings all had 41 apiece. Panthers, Patriots, and Rams all had 40 a pop.
This may be a good time to interject. We've watched enough football to know that sacks, quarterback pressures, and quarterback hits.
And hurries.
You know, pressures is hurries.
Hurries, yes, yeah, I'm sorry. You're right.
Those three numbers combined are more important than just the sack total itself.
Yeah, because Derek, quite frankly, Derek, you know this. If you're playing a great quarterback, he's going to get rid of the ball. So,
I think the scheme relies on them. I mean, you're going to do more short passes if you know you're going to play the Cardinals. Because if you look at the Cardinals team last year, you knew they were coming almost every play, especially late in the game. So you didn't hold the ball, and you probably put a scheme in for three-step passes,
Let me just illustrate to you what we're talking about here. How about the playoff game when the Niners had 12 quarterback hits on Eli Manning, and he took about the worst beating of a quarterback that I think people have seen
in
a long, long time.
How many sacks did the Niners have in that game?
I want to say they might have only had 3. I don't think they had a ton of sacks in that game.
That's a game where he was pulling dirt out and grass out of his helmet, right?
That was the overtime game.
And Derek, remember this too. Having a lot of sacks doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have a great defense. The Eagles had the second most sacks in the league last year, and they had a poor defense. You know, the Chiefs struggled on defense from time to time. They were 5th. The Jaguars certainly didn't have a top defense last year. They were 6th in the league in sacks. So, you know, sacks does not necessarily equate to success either.
I guess you got to cover somebody too, huh?
Yeah, so. That helps. You know what? And the perfect example, Derek, is the Jets. They were sixth in the league with 45 sacks, and they couldn't cover anybody because all their corners are hurt.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, guys. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Thanks, Derek. And look, I think Derek brings up a great point. Sacks are a sexy stat, but they don't tell the whole story.
No, they don't. And I really want to get a look at this, John. I want to confirm our suspicions. How many sacks did Eli take in that game? I'm calling it up right now. It was 12 quarterback
hits. I think it was only three. I think you're right.
I don't think it was more than that. Let's put it that way.
Let's go down to the defensive or team stats. There we go.
Three.
Three for 18.
He took three sacks, a dozen quarterback hits, and that was the, if you remember, that was the day where everybody finally said, you know what, Eli Manning is tough.
Well, and that's why everyone laughs. Oh, well, Peyton Manning, his offensive lineman, always grayed out so well. Do you know why? The dude gets rid of the ball and reads the blitz better than anybody. That's why people are like, well, maybe that Ryan Clady injury is not going to kill him. Do you know why? You got Peyton Manning. Why do you think Tom Brady's sack numbers are always so low? Why do you think Eli Manning's sack numbers are always so low?
Helps.
Why do you, you know, it's because these guys don't want to get rid of the football. Aaron Rodgers, why are his sack numbers so low? He's mobile. He has a quick release. I mean, these are all things that go into figuring out where those stat numbers are going to fall.
No doubt. So anyway, remember, quarterback pressures, quarterback hits, and sacks. Those three numbers, they're all important.
All right, here we go. Here's some more Twitter questions here, Paul. What's the percentage in OTAs for special teams drills? It's probably about the same as training camp, I would say. Quarter?
I've never taken the time to actually figure it out.
20 to 25% maybe? They have two full special team sessions.
Right.
Each practice. And I guess they have what? Three teams / 7-on-7s?
I'm going to say maybe 25%.
25 to 30%,
yeah.
Maybe something like that?
Yeah.
I've never done that math either, to be honest with you. I think that's a good question from Shane. Absolutely. Let's see. And then our buddy Shakes points out, too, that I'm not sure. We should have asked, I guess. There are two Harpers. There is a Chris and Kenneth Harper. One's a running back. One's a wide receiver. So I'm not sure which player the caller was talking about. I should have asked that, but there are two Happers. Kenneth's the running back and Chris is the wide receiver.
The running back, Kenneth, 5'10", 233, rookie out of Temple.
That's the guy I was talking about, the bigger guy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And Chris Harper, 6'1", 228 out of what, Kansas State?
Kansas State. Yep.
And he's not a rookie. He was in the league last year. He came on.
Right. He's a first-year player, right? Technically.
Exactly. ColeWiss88 agrees on your good idea for the temporary IR concussion list. I think that's a good point. Let's see. What else do we got here? Let's see.
I see Sonny Boy tweeted tweeted one here to Lance and myself. I guess he thinks Lance is sitting here. Sorry, John. I think our special teams will be number one in the league.
In what, though? That's the question. Kick coverage, punt coverage.
I will tell you this. They've spent a great deal of emphasis on it, and we know that Brown's an outstanding kicker. We know Weatherford can get the ball downfield, and we know now that the Giants have got some very, very high hopes for Dwayne Harris, who they signed. And with Jeremy Davis coming in, and hopefully Michael Thompson will also be a really good special teams guy, I could see the Giants being improved, John. I don't know if they're going to be number one across the board, but I could see them being better.
I think a lot of the Giants' offseason signings weren't done because of special teams, but I think they had an eye on special teams. They knew JT Thomas could contribute there.
Yeah.
They knew Casillas was a good special teams player. They know Dwayne Harris is a four-way special teams player, both return teams and both
Absolutely.
Coverage teams. So they brought in a lot of talented players to supplement those special teams this offseason. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be a big help. Big, big help. And you hope Dwayne Harris can be a big-time playmaker, Paul, as they try to do kickoff return, as they try to get some scores in special teams, something Giant fans I know have been kind of really hoping for a while.
I think if you look at the stats, and I know Tom Coughlin is a real stickler for field position, average field position is one of the ones that is really like a pet peeve for him. And one of the things that the Giants have been lacking, you know, and the kickoff return coverage has been very good, but the punt return coverage, not as good. And quite honestly, you know, the Giants would like to get more out of their return game, both in kickoff return and in punt return. So you put all those numbers together, they'd like to steal another 8 to 9 to almost 10 yards a game if they could make it work. because they think they're giving up too much to the elite teams in this league in terms of average field position.
I want to touch on a couple of around the league things that have gone down. SI is reporting that Cam Jordan and the Saints have agreed on a 5-year, $60 million contract.
Woo! That's some good money.
Do you know who's watching that contract?
Yeah.
Hello?
Hey, a lot of, you know, the Panthers deal with Newton that they're talking about right now is going to, I think, correct me if I'm wrong here, John, it's going to make him, I think, one of like five QBs who are going to average like 20 a year.
That's a new rate. It's the rate now.
Do you know, how about this?
And Tannehill almost got that amount for big
mistakes. I did a check on this last night, as a matter of fact. Let me just throw this out, folks, and I know we're coming to the end of the show. I don't want to use the rest of it, but I do want to say something about this because Eli Manning is going to be due for a new deal with the Giants. They'll get him signed up to an extension sooner rather than later.
And you know what? If it goes into the offseason, it's fine.
I mean, this guy's won two Super Bowl MVPs. Do you know that in the NFL right now, the top four quarterbacks in terms of average guaranteed salary, I'm not talking about paper salary, I'm talking about guaranteed salary, the top four guys have a combined one Super Bowl ring.
Well, but you pay people for what they're going to do, not for what they've done.
And that's the amazing part about this, because the guys like Brady, who's way down because we know he's taken some liberties with his deals.
Well, again, he's moved stuff around. He hasn't necessarily taken a cut.
Right. But Ben is lower on that list. Eli's lower on that list. Breeze is not up there. You know, Rodgers
is
not.
Breeze is up there.
No,
Breeze has got to be the one guy on the list. Breeze got a bajillion dollars from the Saints, no?
Hold on.
Breeze might be the one Super Bowl on that list
Let me check. Well, maybe I did go a little overboard on that one. Let me go back and check out over
the
cap.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Over the cap. This was a very interesting thing that I looked at because it's about the guaranteed money.
Breeze got a huge contract.
Average money. Average money guaranteed. Matt Stafford leads the NFL at 13.8 a year guaranteed average. Rodgers, Ryan, and Bradford are next.
Breeze is fifth. Okay.
He's fifth.
I knew Breeze was in the mix.
But the top four guys are Stafford, Rodgers, Ryan, Bradford. Rodgers is the only one who has a ring. Is that ridiculous?
Well, what do those three guys have in common, though? They're the most recent contracts.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the thing. And Bradford was the last first overall pick that got the crazy money coming out of college.
I have said, and again, it's another one of my rules, I have said there needs to be a quarterback cap. I think that the NFL should institute a separate quarterback cap.
I don't know about that.
Because the position has become so dilated compared to every other position in the league.
So a quarterback is a max salary?
That's what you do. Your quarterback position, come up with a number. You want to say it's 20 mil?
But it's supposed to be counted in the full pot.
Yes. Count it in the full pot, but separate it and say quarterbacks. You can't spend more than 20 mil on your quarterbacks.
Here's the problem, though.
Break it up how you want. You want to sign two? You want to sign three?
Is that average? Is that every year? How does that work? Because money gets moved around so much with contracts getting restructured. You know, for example, Tony Romo has, you know, an average yearly contract of $18 million, right?
6.7 guaranteed.
But his contract's been redone so many times that I think he has a $27 million cap hit this year. So how would that then go under your cap?
I'm not sure how to mathematically compute the proper rules and regulations, but my point is this, that an NFL team, whether they want to keep two quarterbacks or three quarterbacks, if they want to spend top-heavy on their first guy, then guess what? Their second guy, or if there is a third guy, he's getting nickel and dimed. Okay? If they want to have a respectable backup, guess what? That top guy is not going to get 1/7 of my team's salary cap.
That's fair.
All right. So, that's all I'm saying.
Final piece of NFL news before we say goodbye here, Paul. Adrian Peterson apparently is reporting to OTAs.
That's what they're telling us.
The Vikings sent out a press release that he'll be available to the media along with Mike Zimmer. Today, I think at 2 or 2:30 or something like that.
Sonny Boy apologizes to you.
That's okay. I accept your apology. And I've been arguing with people on Twitter about this for probably 2 months. We have a lot of Giant fans out there that keep telling me, guys, he's going to go to Dallas. That's what the Cowboys do. He's going to go to Dallas. He's not going to play for the Vikings.
Doesn't look like it.
I kept saying from the start, guys, do you know why Adrian Peterson is going to wind up playing for the Vikings? because he's under contract for the Vikings.
And they can pay him.
And he's either going to pay, he's going to either play and get paid by the Vikings, or he's not going to get paid by anyone. And guess what? Do you think Adrian Peterson's leaving $13 million on the table? I don't think so. And this solidifies the Vikings as my sleeper NFC team this year.
Wow.
The Vikings are my sleeper NFC team this year. I think they will, if not make the playoffs, they will come close. I missed on the Rams last year. Now, I didn't think Bradford was going to get hurt, so I'm giving myself a little bit of a mulligan on that one. I loved the Rams last year. They didn't do as well as I thought because of the quarterback situation. But I think the Vikings are my sleeper team in the NFC this year.
I love
Minnesota.
I will not pick a sleeper team this year at this early stage of the year. However, I will add that the Vikings still playing outdoors in that college stadium. I don't know.
See with Adrian Peterson.
They do.
And that defense with Mike Zimmer. See, I think they have a great coaching staff. Zimmer is the head coach. Norv is the offensive coordinator. You have a second-year quarterback. You got Adrian Peterson. They added a couple wide receivers in the offseason. They have a solid defense. Guys, young players that they drafted last year is all coming into their own at the same time.
John,
I think the Vikings break out.
Your logic is not misfounded. There's logic to what you're saying. I'm not saying that you're wrong or that you're crazy. There's an intangible here, though, that teams that play in transplanted homes.
Okay, I buy that.
That doesn't always seem to go so well.
Let me put it this way. I believe the Vikings will be playing for something when we visit there on December 27th.
Oh, great.
That's my bet.
Great. Just what I wanted to hear.
Oh, Paul, people are going to just roll over and die for you. You got to earn these wins. Come on now.
Look, can't get the Giants secure the bye by the Carolina game, and we play the last two games like they mean nothing.
Well, I didn't say it was going to count for the Giants. I just said it was going to count for the Vikings. That's all I'm saying.
I got you.
Tino, you're killing me. So tomorrow is it you and Lance, I believe?
Is he back?
I believe it is. Yeah, Lance is back. Columbia
okay.
got blown up by Miami 21-3 yesterday in the College World Series.
Will he have a voice left?
Yes. He did those baseball games solo. Yeah, that was my reaction too. Imagine a nine-inning baseball game solo. So Lance, he might be a little beat up tomorrow.
He might need 3 days of sleep.
I know. He's flying. He landed, I believe, at noon today.
Okay.
So that's why he wasn't here today. Paul subbed for Lance, and he'll be back tomorrow. And he'll be with Paul on Big Blue Kickoff
you
Live.
Got it.
And then Anita, Paul, and Lance have you the rest of the way. Thanks for the time, my friend. For Paul DeTino. Wow. I'm John Schmelk. We'll see you next time on Giants.com.
Bye.
Have a good one, everybody.
Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down through the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Want to get no punch.
Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.